Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Thank you for joining us for this, the latest edition of the OIS podcast series. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm chairman of the GAS program at the Institute. It's my great pleasure today to be joined by Anders Hove and Jan Shin, research associates at the Institute, and we're here to discuss the subject of China's power system in an age of insecurity and their contributions for forthcoming Oxford Energy Forum magazine. Now, in this ever-changing world, it's important to timestamp the recordings of these podcasts, and so we're making this recording on the afternoon of Thursday, the 10th of March, 2022. Jan and Anders, welcome back to the OIS podcast series.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Glad to be back.
Well, Anders, can I perhaps come to you first? You know, the title of this podcast, as I said in my introductory remarks, are China's power system in an age of insecurity. So I expect a simple question, you know, why that title at this time?
Yeah, I think that this relates both to what has been happening in the China's context last year, as well as what is currently going on in the overall macro policy environment internationally for China this year. But certainly last year was a very important year in terms of several power outages, key ones happening in September that led to some major changes in the structure of electric power markets. But this concern goes on, and I know Jan is going to talk about this a little bit later, which is that the government has essentially been steadily raising the prominence of the topic of energy security as the concerns about fuel price volatility rise and concerns about energy supply, physical security increase. In terms of the power outages, which is one of the main topics of several of the articles in this issue, basically the power outages that happened in September did have quite a variety of causes. And it's important to understand that China is a large country and it has a number of provinces, and some of the causes in the individual provinces were different. But one of the leading causes, I think it's generally recognized, is the disconnect between power prices and the physical price of coal that the power plants would pay to acquire the coal supply to generate electricity. And that, as I said, led to major change in the structure of the power market. But I also highlight in my article the important role that flexibility, or the lack thereof, played in these particular situations of last year. And this is something which I think analysts have been aware of for quite some time, and the government has gradually tried to rectify. But flexibility poses a challenge for power markets in China in a couple of different respects. First of all, we all understand that peak load is a particular time when outages would be more likely. The lack of flexibility on the side of generation, where you are not able to ramp up, let's say, renewable energy quickly enough, or to store energy quickly enough, or most importantly and most cheaply, to share energy between provinces, where you might have a surplus in one province and a shortage in another. This historically has been a problem for China and is not purely related to the existence of transmission lines, but rather relates to the structure of the markets and the need that provinces have to seek out self-sufficiency in their design of their own power markets. But also on the demand side, what we see is that there is increasingly inflexible demand coming from residential and commercial sectors, and that these sectors do not dominate the power sector as they would in other countries. But nevertheless, when it is hot outside and the outages happened in September, it was not particularly dramatic climate problem at the time. But in general, there is an increasing concern about higher peak loads due to residential and commercial power load peaks. And that means that if the industrial loads cannot be at least somewhat flexible through the pricing of electricity and at one level, or through specific programs on the demand side at another level, means that the power system has to work that much harder to keep the power supply reliable.
Interesting. So Jan, can I come to you then? Because last year, China announced a coal tariff reform following the power shortages, and the power market reform has apparently actually speeded up. So can you perhaps tell our listeners, what is the status of this and the latest policy developments?
Yeah, thank you. So yes, of course, with the crisis, it instead has triggered a breakthrough in the institutional setup, and that is starting with the coal tariff reform you mentioned, and that is of course, a game changer. Well, what is that reform? So last October, when China's state planner announced to widening the coal-fired benchmark tariff, the fluctuation range from plus minus 20%, and also it allows higher tariff for energy-intensive industry and excluding the spot trading. And in addition, in that reform in last October, so all of coal-fired power generation need to get into the market, and all of industrial and commercial users need to get into the power market as well. So as of end last year, probably less than half of China's power consumption are in the market based, which isn't a real market because it's still a mid to long term trading dominated. And this ratio is expected to expand to more than 70% this year. So of course, in the near term, the mid to long term contract will be still be dominating. But again, I would really emphasize that following the power outages last autumn, this big reform on the coal-fired power tariff side really expanding the market, but also it is really opening doors to a mindset change, is that power price has to be market-based. It can either increase and decrease. And well, I mean, this is really a milestone since China's second round of power market reform starting in 2015, the document number 9. But of course, then following that in this January, then we have the state planner released the high-level opinion on establishing the national unified power market system, so which is even more detailed roadmap for China's power sector or for building up a national power market initially by 2025 and finalize it by 2030. And in the meantime, there are numerous rules being released either on the time of use, power price, cross-provincial spot trading rules, and there's also a draft in national spot power trading being discussed, and even in the at the provincial level, the second batch of spot power market pilots, they have also launched trading this year. So yeah, a lot to expect and looking forward to.
Well, Anders, can I come to you, because you had to give us a kind of nice overview of kind of some of the reforms that are being talked about, but you know, what are the barriers to the reforms that are actually aimed there to deal with the power crisis?
Yeah, I think the reforms that, Jan, you mentioned, these are really critical reforms, and many of them have been long anticipated or hoped for many years. So it's great to see them coming into play. And in my paper, I do raise what I think could be some of the most important barriers to carrying these reforms to their ultimate and logical conclusion. And I think that some of those barriers are very common around the world, and then some of them are perhaps a little bit more unique to China. So I'll just list them out. But one of them is, you know, the very strong dominance in China of the state-owned power companies and their general preference for very large-scale capital investment on the supply side, especially in traditional conventional power generation and very high-voltage power lines. Then you also have provincial protectionism. I mentioned this already in my first answer, which is that provinces have historically sought to be relatively self-sufficient in power, both because they would like to guarantee reliability, but also because they may have stakes in power plants in their local region. And so helping those power plants dispatch more frequently helps them pay back their financing and earns tax revenue locally and preserves jobs locally. Then you have the obstacles generally around the world, but maybe particularly in certain sectors of China, to investments in energy efficiency. And I think that whenever you have a supply shortfall, energy efficiency is key to building greater resilience, even if whether or not you have a power outage, it still benefits the country, it still benefits the demand side sectors. And we see obstacles in China that are very typical around the world, such as just the disconnect between the owners of buildings and the occupants, or the owners of industry parks, or the builders of industry parks, and those who rent spaces in those industry parks. And then that relates to the fourth barrier or obstacle, which is really just the attitude of consumers and industry. And again, in China, it's not really the residential consumers that play the dominant role in consuming electricity or energy. It's really more the large-scale industry or large-scale commercial properties that are dominating the usage of electricity. And many times those are very large companies that are located at large, potentially also owned by large state-owned companies, industry parks. And you would think that the government would be able to play a very leading role in getting industry parks to move forward with distributed energy and energy efficiency investments and meeting really the highest standards for building just a strong and smart grid at the local level. But a lot of times, because these people who are occupying spaces at these industry parks, they are there only for 2 or 3 years, or maybe they have those short-term leases and they don't control the property, they also have this kind of dilemma between the owner and the occupant, or the builder and the owner and the occupant, in terms of investing in either distributed generation or in efficiency. So I would put forward those four main obstacles. And you notice that there's a balance there. There's obstacles to reform on the demand side and obstacles to reform on the, let's say, generation and transmission side.
Well, Anders, thank you very much indeed for that. But can I come to you, Jan, to kind of build upon that? You know, what are the challenges in realizing this long-term goal of a nationally unified power market?
Definitely, there are many, and it's already a wonderful wrap-up by Anders. Well, the future is very bright, but there are many hurdles on the way to getting there. And so to begin with, I've mentioned that currently already a high share of China's power consumption is in the market, but which is sort of a mid to long term. And to be precise, it's meaning more monthly and yearly contracts. So this very rigid type of trading will still be dominating in the next years. I've mentioned the spot trading pilot, which typically means more a hourly power pricing or a more day ahead or real time power market, as we would have in Europe and the US. But these pilots, the provincial pilots I mentioned, they are still right in pilot stage, and I would expect this to be the case for maybe several years. So which means that in the meantime, there will be the regulator will be running a power market with both a partly in the market and partly in the more regulated, and with an coexistence of these rigid power contracts and some tiptoeing into more day-ahead and real-time markets, and this really creating challenges in the meantime. Well, hopefully they could solve that. And the second, also on the user side, I agree with Anders, because following the tariff reform, of course, the goal is to it is required now for all industrial and commercial users to enter the market and boosting power trading volumes. And how to implement this? I mean, I have been tracking the provincial guidelines and etc. So the grid companies, they have more or less now becoming the procurement for these new users. But there are so many of them. There are more than 100,000 of them. Well, of course, the rules are being released, etc. But still, this is very challenging. And second, and following that, I mean, we are currently still in the phase of high fuel prices, coal prices, which is very important for China's thermal power producers, are still at high levels. So at high fuel costs, and now which we can say that in the near term, the power tariffs is probably only allowed to go upward. And facing the higher tariff, I mean, would we see more resistance then from the user side? I think this is very critical for this year. Thirdly, also when the it is being mentioned that all type of power generation, meaning nuclear, hydro, renewables, other renewables, they should all entering the market at some certain stage. So in the last week, we have the two sessions, the yearly Congress meeting in China. Very interesting, a state planner mentioning again, for example, the power pricing scheme for nuclear generation. And that triggered a lot of debate as well. And I see that this discussion will be ongoing. So all type of generators, they will all have their own standing point and they will have their own argument and et cetera. So yeah, I mean, reform has never been easy, but I'm still, again, I'll end with a very positive note. I believe that as the roadmap is very clear and we'll get there. It's important to work together and clear the hurdles.
It is. But of course, there's something else that's kind of happening, which has created a huge focus on energy security. And so I'd just like to come to you, Anders, if I can, and ask you, you know, is that focus on energy security likely to help the reformers? Or perhaps could it work against the solutions that you both are talking about?
Yeah, I think it's important to be clear. I think that the focus on energy security, while to some extent the words sound accurate, nevertheless, I don't think it's likely to help accelerate reforms, or especially to help accelerate the advance of renewable energy or flexibility. It does seem that when the words energy security come up, oftentimes this language, this particular phrasing, does tend to reinforce paradigms and existing institutional structures in the industry, in the energy sector, and in the economy overall. And in China, those structures do tend to emphasize capital investment in supply side plants, coal plants in general, and it does not tend to emphasize the most cost-efficient solutions or long-term structural changes, because, of course, in a crisis, you are dealing with short-term needs. And that does have the immediate ramification that I think many people are aware of, which is that there is definitely a turn back towards building more coal plants, and that includes building more coal plants in these very large energy bases in remote areas. Recently at the two sessions, there was the statement by the NDRC that China would build 450 gigawatts of energy bases in the desert regions. I'm not sure how exactly that will happen and what provinces we're talking about there. It's a new number, but that would be more than half of the remaining target for wind and solar to be installed under the NDC, China's nationally determined contribution target of 1,200 megawatts combined of wind and solar. Sorry, did I say megawatts? Gigawatts. If 450 gigawatts of energy bases were built, that would already be the bulk of the difference, and that would leave very little opportunity for the kind of flexible trading of renewables across provincial boundaries or emphasis on distributed renewables and storage on the demand side that I think would be, generally speaking, much more economic and probably would be what the market would deliver if it could be delivered more on the basis of lowest cost to the overall system. So I do think that there are benefits that the immediate outage did cause an acceleration of some of the market reforms that we've already been discussing. And I think that there's a recognition that the past system of fixed prices and steadily decreasing cost for electricity as a matter of economic policy was no longer viable.
So Yang, can I come back to you on this kind of energy security question? Because China seems to have put energy security more in the policy, and the focus now is kind of signaling to build more new coal plants in the next few years. So my question is, you know, what impacts will this have on policy and on China's power market reform?
Yes, I mean, as Andesh mentioned too, so we are seeing the signals of allowing much more coal build out. Well, of course, following the power outages last year, and we've touched upon it in the new upcoming OEF article as well. Energy security, I think in Chinese term, it described as having your energy rice bowl in your own hands, meaning which is coal domestically for China, has been stressed numerous times since last year in official media, etc. And definitely you are seeing more and more frequently more opening to build more new coal plants to serve. One is to serve peak load, and second is, as Anders mentioned, to build coal plants in connection with this new renewable basis. And there was an interesting concept called three pillars of China's new power system. So it's this large renewable basis plus coal plants as supplementing, and plus the long-distance transmission lines, the ultra-high-voltage lines. Yes, this seems to be what the policymakers having in mind right now. On one hand, yes, I mean, we have this dilemma in China, where there's vast renewable resources in the West and the load centers are in the East. So yes, the three pillars, as they mentioned, is to overcome this obstacle and to utilize resources in a wide range. But apart from that, I think this whole new concept also needs much better institutional setup, exactly what the power market reform can help with. So again, the state grid has released the interprovincial spot trading rules. That's a start, and how we're going to see this being integrated more into the wider power trading, into the monthly and yearly contracts, and how to integrate, because that could add to the flexibility of the grids and on the wider scale. And second, of course, to reduce renewable curtailment and to really make this thermal power plants to just be supplementary rather than baseload. Because overall, I mean, we still have a climate target that China has pledged to achieve carbon peak and neutrality. So yeah, even we need really more institutional to improve the institutional setup, improve the power market reform, the market rules, really to facilitate this whole transformation.
Thank you very much indeed, Yan, for that. Now, can I come to both of you for the last question? Because I always like to end a podcast with a kind of forward-looking question. So, Anders, why don't I come to you first? You mentioned China's aim to build up a national unified power market by 2030. Could you perhaps elaborate on that goal and what is the significance? And then I'll come to you, Yan, for your views on that. Anders, what do you think?
Well, it is hugely significant. China is definitely by far the largest power generating country in the world. And it's also geographically a huge country with the largest population in the world and the largest energy demand in the world. And there is no equivalent sized land area anywhere in the world that has a unified or even a quasi-unified and regularized electricity market. And so if China could achieve that, even if it was over 15 years, including the introduction of document number 9 in 2015 and then going up to 2030, that would be an amazing achievement. And I think that the question that I have, which Yan sort of already raised, is that in the document that came out calling for that specific timeline to have it be a national power market basically in existence and functioning well by 2030, the question is whether that market is really the leading factor driving, let's say, investment and the overall design of the energy system, or if the energy market is largely confined to a fairly small role around optimizing the existing operation of existing power generation assets. And for example, if the spot market accounts for a very low volume and almost all the trading is on these very long-term contracts, that would represent more of an administratively planned state where the market is, yes, very large geographically and in terms of energy trading, but perhaps not as meaningful as the power markets that we have in some other countries.
Interesting. Well, Yan, perhaps can I come to you for the last word? You know, would you like to build upon any of the views that Anders just given?
In terms of size and in terms of unified, again, this long-term goal is very impressive. And also, for me, really to understand, okay, why even falling the power outages, we have this breakthrough in the institutional barrier and to have this long-term roadmap. Because I believe that it is because the policymaker, they realize now it is important to use market-based mechanism to helping China to transform its energy system and achieving the climate target. So yeah, and market-based power pricing could send better and more efficient signal to consumers, to producers, and to enable investments. So this is really the significance of this. In addition, I think what's in state planner's announcement or in the policy document is that it's a national unified power market system. So actually the emphasis on the system is very interesting, where they define it as a multi-layer power market system, where on one level, there is this different time horizon. There's a national power market that is more short term. You have like that day ahead real time, monthly, yearly, and plus the balancing service or ancillary services. Second, there's a regional perspective as well. In this vast system, there'll be provincial markets, there'll be regional markets. There will be a gradual integration across different dimensions. Also interesting is that in the policy document, it discussed to speeding up and pushing forward to build up a national power exchange. I think that will help to realize this unified market. A lot to be looking forward to in China's power market reform.
Okay, well, look, thank you very much, both of you, Jan and Anders, for such an interesting discussion. One of the clear messages I get out of it, is that reform is happening, reform has to happen. But then, of course, world events, and security of supply may have implications on the pace of that. But certainly, we have to kind of watch and see. So, I've really enjoyed our conversation, as always, that builds on the messages from your recent Oxford Energy Forum articles. I hope you have all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.